position number 21189, room 2.
Mr. Kwiatkowski, reel 2.
I really wanted to fight the Germans, be active, not serve in some unit which can undergo some training or some other, well, propaganda business or something. I wanted to fight the Germans. As a matter of fact, when I was escaping from Płońsk and I walked along a straight stretch of a road, you know, I thought to myself, well, where is this road going to lead me? But if I do manage to get to Warsaw, I will arm myself and I am not going to let myself be taken by the Germans alive. If I am lucky, I may take one or two with me. If not, okay, I will die, but I will not go to German prison. And it looked to me that that unit offered me that possibility. And the third reason was, of course, that the two of my friends were in that unit, you know. I had other friends who presumably belonged to AK, although they did not say so. But if they did, they were in some sort of not particularly active units. Might have been some NCO school or some other, you know, second line groups. And my choice was, in that respect, was very good because the platoon was extremely active.
Did that platoon have a number or a name?
Well, the name was, as I translated in Pluton Osłony Sztabu Okręgu Warszawskiego Narodowych Sił Zbrojnych, the Guards Platoon of the Headquarters of Warsaw District of the National Armed Forces. But the platoon, well, one of its functions was to guard or protect any meetings of the HQ. And that was the most nerve-wracking and most difficult job of all. I've been on that duty on 3 or 4 occasions. And what it consisted of, there would be only about 5 or 6 of us, the guardsmen, so to speak, and 2 or 3 would be staying in the house or the flat where the meeting of the staff officers took place. So 2 or 3 of us, armed with pistols and grenades, would be in that actual flat, you know, as a last line of defense. By the way, it was usually arranged in such a way that we did not see the actual staff officers. A lot of flats in Warsaw had 2 entrances. The main entrance is, if you like, kitchen entrance to the staircase. So we would be brought up through the kitchen entrance and stay in the kitchen. Now, the other 2 or 3 would patrol the street outside. And if the meeting lasted 2-3 hours, it was extremely difficult to pretend that you are a passerby. And in 1 or 2 places, the street was rather residential, no shops, no cafes, nothing. So you just tried the best to hide yourself from the any potential observer. And you would change, you know, the chappie in charge of the guard duty will send the fellows who were in the flat into the street and those from the street into the flat. The other difficulty was that We had to be very calm. Again, obviously, those of us who were in the street were also armed with pistols and grenades. But you had to be careful that if there was just a passing German patrol, that you did not attack them. You know, it was, you were only to act if you were certain that the Germans somehow obtained the knowledge of the meeting and they came to, you know, arrest those people. You know. So you had to stay extremely cool and don't get provoked by some German passing through the streets or possible German police patrol to hide from them. But and of course we realized one other thing, that we were well to defend the staff officers with our life, and if it came to any fighting, most likely we would be dead. You know, there was no much chance of us getting out of that spot. You know, but in spite of all that, there was always volunteers in the platoon for that duty, you know, knowing perfectly well how risky and how frustrating, how nerve-wracking the service was. But then we carried out other activities. Well, training was one of them, to get to know weapons and in general training. And raids on German firms or companies purely to get money. Napoleon said that you need three things to carry war: money, money, and money. And why a car? All the communist partisans, groups, and resistance were supplied, well, in case of a car, by the Polish government authorities from London, where actually the planes mostly flew from Italy. But, you know, and they were given money and equipment and weapons and ammunition and what have you. The communists were supplied by the Russians. And the NSZ had to rely on its own resources in, you know, whatever they managed to gain themselves. So we did carry out various raids on German firms to get money or something which you could sell in on the market, you know, get money that way.
Can you describe any of them? Any well, other raids?
Yes, I took part in, well, two. I was supposed to take part in other two, but one of them did not materialize because the lorries which were supposed to come to load the materials from the factory did not turn up, so we were stood down, you know. The other one was carried out in, I took part, and that was successful. It was a small German factory making clothes and also clothing for the German army. And that was in a... The factory was more like a workshop, but, you know, it employed, I don't know, 30, 40 people. And it was situated in a building which was occupied by other people. So the difficulty there was, apart that it was in Chenna Street, which is now close to Marszałkowska Street, which was burned in the center of Warsaw. The problem there was to gain control of the building, of the entire building, not just the factory. And the tactics was to allow everybody in, but nobody out. So that if somebody wanted to walk in from the street, you make sure that he get in before you stop him, you know. And it went off very successfully. The complete coincidence, in that building there was a school which the Germans allowed, and officially it was a school for fish farming. But under that cover, that was a Polish grammar school. And when we carried out this raid, they had a matriculation examination in progress. So when our chaps entered the hall where the exam was taking place, the teachers, the Polish teachers, and told that it was the Germans who raided them. When they realized that it wasn't, that it was Polish resistance, it was a sign of relief. And the students helped us to carry the reels of material and what have you down the stairs and to load it on the lorries to be taken away. The other, well, you know, I could talk about this in great details, but that's not what we are here for. The other raid we carried out on the Warsaw Town Hall. In the town hall, there was a Lombard, which is a pawn shop, if you like, but it was run, and it existed before the war, and it was, people would bring valuables, leave them there, and borrow money. And so there were quite a lot of jewelry, you know, and other valuable things which people brought to borrow the money. And we learned that the Germans were planning to pinch all this stuff. So that was why, before they do it, we better take it. So we carried out a raid to on this, where, you know, it's in Theater Square, if you know Warsaw, Place Teatralny. And next to the, can't remember the name of the palace, where the governor of Warsaw, the German governor of Warsaw was, and, you know, they had bunkers and, you know, machine guns and everything. And to carry this thing out under the German noses was quite a daring plan. Unfortunately, one of our chaps, who had have much experience, spoiled it. Everything was going all right. We actually took control of the office, and two of our chaps went down to the vaults with the manager of the office to take out the valuables and take them out. And somebody entered the office through the door, and this our chap, instead of allowing, because that was the principle, allowed everybody in, don't let anybody out. And he tried to stop him before he actually went into the office. And this fellow started running away. And I think most likely he was a Pole. And this idiot of ours fired at him. Luckily, he didn't hit him. But, of course, we had to withdraw once the alarm was raised by shot being fired. We had to withdraw. Now, my duty was to stand on guard by the main gate to make sure that should something go wrong, the gate won't be closed so that we can escape. And on the other hand, if the Germans learned and came in force to take us, well, with my 3 or 4 grenades and a pistol, I was supposed to defend them, you know. Well, after the shot was fired and our chaps had to withdraw, luckily nothing else happened. But, well, it wasn't just our chaps who were, you know, the whole crowd of people were running out. And I had to stand there waiting and counting that every one of our chaps got out before I can leave. And you know, even seconds feel like hours. And have I seen everybody? Has everybody else gone? Well, luckily, I kept my nerve. I all came out and I left the last and who weren't caught. So that was another part. Oh, we had few others, but sort of minor affairs. But nevertheless, you know, quite a nerve-wracking when I was outside a restaurant where we wanted a money. The owner was a Pole, but the whole restaurant was occupied by the Germans, and then he lived off the Germans, so we wanted some money. As a matter of fact, in those cases, we would give them a receipt, you know, to the owner that we confiscated that money, and when the war is over, he can claim it back, you know, that it wasn't a, you know, just robbery. And my duty was to stand, I don't know if you know Karowa Street, which leads from Krakowskie Przedmieście to Powiśle. There's a serpentine staircase and a serpentine road leading down to the Vistula River. And I was to stand on guard there to have a, if they had to withdraw suddenly, you know, so that protect the escape route. As I stood there, two German soldiers stood next to me. And, you know, the Germans didn't like people who don't work, you know, who stand about doing nothing. So I was swearing at the Germans, come on, go away, you know. Well, if it had came to the shooting, I probably would shoot both of them because they wouldn't expect me to be armed. But that was the object of the exercise. The object of the exercise was to keep the retreat route open. And so the two fellows who went into the office of that restaurant were apparent, as it happened, the owner wasn't there at the time, you know, and so they couldn't get any money from him on that occasion. And we all withdrew from well, the other major function of the platoon was to get arms, and of course we could only get the arms from the Germans. So it was to attack the Germans or disarm the Germans. Don't forget, it was before the uprising. It was, you know. And here I was, you know, as I said, with the group, you know, I was with, we were quite successful. We all together within the 2 months period disarm about 8 Germans, individually, you know, all told. We set up, we had other plans too. It was, well, the simplest way was to take a German pistol. Rifle was no good because you could not hide it anywhere when you took it. The valuable thing was submachine gun, you know, automatic pistol. But the order was, I know it sounds paradoxical, you were not supposed to kill the German. We were not supposed to fire except in self-defense. Now, we were the attackers, but we could only use firearms if we were threatened. And that was perhaps for 3 reasons. One, a shooting a passing German soldier to us what was murder. Nothing else but morally completely wrong, you know. Just an innocent German soldier passing through and shooting him. That would be easy. Shoot him and take his weapons and go away. So that was on moral grounds. The other one was, of course, Germans' repercussions. You know, if you shot the German, quite likely that they will shoot some Poles, although it had no effect because they were shooting Poles left, right and center, whether the AK did anything or not. And the third one was extremely important from different point of view. If you manage to disarm the German and you let him go, and who didn't even spit at him or kick him or hit him, just took his arm, go away. Now, he would tell his friends in the barracks or whenever that he did obey what he was told to do, and, you know, no harm came to him. So we thought that would be a line of propaganda that we'd stop the next one, and he knew about that. He would say, all right, I'm not going to resist. Well, frankly, he usually had no chance to resist because, you know, you were pointing a gun at him and unexpectedly, what could he do? Now, there was one thing. Instinctively, or however, every single one would go for his pistol. You know, if you stopped him, stick him up, if you like. And the thing which we learned to do was to grab hold of his hand and let him and hold it for a second or two so that it would sink into his mind that he hasn't got a chance. Then if he tries to pull his pistol out, he will be dead, you know. But, you know, that required some, you know, coolness on our side. And with the two of my friends who introduced me to this organization, one of them, the one whose parents had the villa, you know, he was killed during the uprising. The other one lives in Warsaw, and I am in constant touch with him. We developed our own technique, the disarming, and ideally, you said that you need four people for this disarming patrol. One who was unarmed and had good documents like identity card, certificate of employment, and so on. He would walk what we called na świeca kanto, you know, leading lights, you know, and he would walk ahead 20, 30 yards. And the reason was that the danger was that crossing roads and coming to corners. Because if you came to a corner, you don't know what is behind the corner. There might be, because the German patrols were all over the place, you know, and so that you won't walk into a German patrol. So should there be a patrol, when the one ahead was walking, he would signal to you, so you would stop, move back, or what have you. So that was the function of one fellow. The other three, two of us would walk along one pavement, another one on the other pavement. So should we come into some trouble, one would protect the other. You know, if the Germans stopped two, the one on the other side of the street on the other pavement would come to their help. And also, but when we spotted a German soldier whom we decided to run, now this is our time to disarm him. Don't forget that there were Germans passing all the way, and cars and trams and food loaded, so you had only a few seconds to do it before other Germans would come on the scene. So the tactics was when you spotted the one which you decided to go, well, this is the chance to disarm him. All three of us would come to the same side of the road where the German was. We would approach him from behind. The two would walk on both sides of the German, turn around and face him with their pistols drawn up from under the beds. And the third one would stay at the back, behind the German. And his duty was to grab hold of his hand. Plus, of course, he was armed. I mean, you know, the third one was armed as well. And it worked out quite well. There was one one principle. We didn't get a lot of training in our unit. We had to develop our own technique and, you know, modus operandi, you know. And so the three of us, we had telepathic, you know, communication. We didn't have to say to one another, now, you know. We knew instinctively, all three of us. And the other technique which we developed was never release the safety clutch on your pistol, only when you are going to fire, just before you fire. You know, there's a safety clutch on the side of the pistol. You have the pistol and you can turn the safety clutch with your thumb just before firing. And the reason was that if you didn't do that, and if it came to some, shoveling whatever, you know, then you could fire by, by mistake. You know, you are pushing or whatever, or trying to grab hold of the German or whatever. You could pull the trigger and you fired unnecessarily. So that was absolutely, I would try to persuade other people to do that exactly the same. And unfortunately, on our last patrol, which was on Sunday before Tuesday, where the uprising took place, started, we were on a disarming patrol, and this is what happened. The fellow did not release the safety clutch before he needed it. We were looking that day for a group of German with a with automatic pistol, like a Schmeisser. We were patrolling for about more than 2 hours. We couldn't find one. So eventually we said, well, we can't get that, so we better satisfy ourselves with pistols. And we came across those two Germans. One was from the Luftwaffe, the other one was from the Wehrmacht. And we attempted to disarm those two. Well, you would have to go into great detail while we're talking. Anyway, Zbyszek, the friend with the Wilda, you know, who was with me, him and I, we disarmed the, because the, when we tried to stop the two Germans, they split up, you know. The two Germans, and we disarmed the one from the Wehrmacht. No shooting, nothing, just took his. We were given also, until then, when we were taking the pistols, we were just taking the pistols out of the holder. Now we had orders to take belts and holders as well. So, but we just calmly. You know, I could speak German quite well then, you know, so I would always say, you know, we are not bandits, we won't harm you, all we want is your arms. If you give your arms, no harm will come to you, you know. It's a standard phrase or something. Of course, you know, you could talk till doomsday, you know, with these situations. But, you know, something sinks in, you know. And we disarmed this fellow, took his belt with his pistol and let him go. And the other three of us, because there were five of us plus the one who was the leading chap, started the one from the German from the Luftwaffe started resisting, you know, and they were sort of, well, what's the word, you know, well, not fighting him, but, you know, shoving him and so on. And one of our charge must have the pistol, the safety catch released, because he fired while struggling went on. Then, of course, they all jumped off. The Germans started running away. They fired at him and hit him, and he rolled, fell on the pavement and rolled into the